This is an interview with Ballard Pappy Taylor. Pappy, tell us about your career in show business.
Well, there's a lot to tell about it, because when I was a young boy back in the Carolina Mountains, I learned to play the five-string banjo. It's a homemade banjo. And that's all the kind of music they had back on the hill at that time, just a fiddle and a homemade banjo. That's all I saw. We moved to Kentucky in 1918. That's when the prohibition was voted at it. That prohibition deal in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was raised up down on a farm down in Darrah County in Casey County in Kentucky. I was about nine years old then. So I was raised up on a farm, and when I got 17 years old, my mother sold 10 pounds of goose feathers and bought me a fiddle. An old fella, he went blind. He couldn't play anymore. He got sick, and he told me he'd sell me his fiddle for $10. And it's two bowls and a case, $10. Cause that $10 was a lot of money then. And that's how I got my fiddle. And 2 years later, I was playing on WLW. I was 18 years old. And I played on WLW, started playing there. So I didn't know what the word sponsor meant at that time. That was 1928. So one of the boys was working at Procter & Gamble's, and we played one show there, so they wouldn't give us no other spot. So we went over WCKY, that was around the last 28, and we went over CKY, it was 29, I think, around Christmas. And me and my cousin Elmer Rupert and Gordon Clemens, we started over, and they gave us a name of the Carolina Troubadours. And we played there a while, and then I quit. And then I went down North Carolina where my grandpa lived, and my mother was sick. She went back there, so I quit there for a while. And then I went back and worked on the farms about, during the Depression. Worked fit since the day of my dinner. I'm about 21 years old, I'm 32. And that was when the Depression hit. And my cousin gave me a job on the farm, working fit since the day, and I milked four cows before I went to work, and then milked four cows. Plow in the field all day. And in 34, I joined a bunch called the Kentucky Mountaineers, Uncle Henry's original Kentucky Mountaineers. Me and the Coon Hunter, Casey Jones, Billy Foy. So I got sick and I was in the hospital, and Uncle Henry and them went to WHAS in Louisville, and then I was up in Illinois. I was sick in the hospital there for a while, in the sanatorium. When they come to Chicago in they come up there around 42 on the Summertime Frolic, WJJD, and then I joined back in with them. And we was all staff musicians there. That was one of the best country programs on the show at that time, as far as pay was concerned. And then when the TV come in, Marshall Fields, a big owner there, that big Marshall Fields store in Chicago, he owned the station, and they couldn't get TV rights because it's connected with newspaper. So our bunch split up. Then I went to Arkansas, and I joined a bunch called the Blue Ridge Mountain Boys. Bill Franklin and Delmas Franklin and Jim Raines. Then we went to, from Arkansas, we went to Rome, Georgia. We played down there on the radio till about 1950. And around 1st of 51, the Korean War got my boys, and I went to Nashville. And I went up there to Bill Monroe, always wanted me to do the old man act with him, so I went there, and I run in Roy Clark. I run into him. He was 16 years old, and me and him was on a show together with Lonzo and Oscar, and I had to drive the car. I was older than Roy. Let Roy drive one night. We had to go to Omaha to play the state fair. And I told Roy, I said, Roy, you got to drive. It is raining. We got to drive all night to get there to play the fair. So I told Roy if he felt the car weave, I said, don't hit your brake. If you do, you'll spin. We'll go off the road. And that's exactly what he done. We're just lucky we didn't go off, turn over. We went into water about almost, you know, about a couple of feet deep or 3 foot. And Roy and this lady singer, they wasn't hurt. I was in the back seat sleeping, so they wasn't hurt. So I just laid back down, and they waded out. And about an hour and a half, a wrecker come pulled us out. We had to drain all the oil out of the car. And we got back on the road. We didn't wreck the car. Bent the bumper on one side a little. And then after we was on that show, I played with Jam Up Honey and Ernest Tubbs. You know, I was just booked out with them. And a fella called me, this fella Jim Raines, one of the Blue Ridge Mountain managers, he called me, and he said, we've got a deal in New York. So I went to New York and played at the Greenwich Village Bar, and it's a contest for the best country outfit. And we won the contest. We could have went back for a recording session. And Arthur Godfrey's talent scout, he come down and wanted us for New Year or Christmas to come back. And his name was Blay Fox, I remember it. As about 50, it's in 51 after I left Nashville. And them boys, this fella and his wife and her brother, they wouldn't go back to play in New York. We had to play out the barn for a whole week. And at midnight, when we was playing, there's had a porch come out over the stage, and there's an old rooster. They turn a light on, the rooster come out there, crow every night. I said, well, that makes me feel at home, hearing that rooster crow.
Yeah.
I used to get up with the rooster, you know. Yeah. Didn't have an alarm clock. When the rooster start crowing, you get up.
Back in Casey County?
Yeah, that's in Casey County. So, them boys wouldn't, they wouldn't go back, and we could have been on Arthur Godfrey's show, see, and missed out on that. So I just told them to heck with them, and my youngest brother lives here, Tommy Taylor, and you know, you met him.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays the... He's a good bluegrass fiddler, so I come here and we started nightclubs. And I never did go back on the road. And when Roy Clark come here, well, you know, I started him out down there.
Mm-hmm.
He'd I told him his wife was a cousin of mine. He was playing at La Swordsville. So he gave me his phone number. He lives in Tulsa. He gave me his phone number, and I wrote his wife a letter. She sent me a letter back that her grandfather and my grandfather were brothers, and Roy told me to get my fiddle and get out there, and I went out and stayed a whole week with him in Tulsa. He put on a big show there. He had everybody there from Goober of Hee Haw to Bob Hope, you know, and I got to meet up, you know, all of them.
Mm-hmm. When was this?
That is a year ago this last June, or July, or I mean August, in September. That is in 76. And then Roy and Bob Hope, they had a big show over here at the Coliseum, and I was over there and got to meet Pearl Bailey and Johnny Bench and different ones. So I never did go back in the show business because, you know, I'd been sick there in the hospital a while and had arthritis. And of course, me and my brother get together, we go out and play some now.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when we were in Chicago, we made transcriptions. For 2 weeks, and we never made no single record. It's transcriptions.
Okay. Singing there.
That is me singing there.
Oh yeah.
I wasn't in too good a voice at that time, but of course I'm not supposed to be a singer. because I'm no Frank Sinatra, you know that.
Well, don't be unduly modest now.
And no Bing Crosby. But that's the real mountain song there, old Joe Clark. That's a true song. I met the fellas that wrote that back, now I think around 30, 31. They had the state fiddlers contest at McKinney High School, and there's a fella that was a judge of the fiddle contest. I won the contest, won $7.50 in gold. And they said they used to go to Joe Clark's house, there's three of them, and they made that song up. They was old fellas. They said they made that song up when they leave the house. They'd sing it, they'd make up verses. I don't remember the man's name, but that's been 30, 40 years ago, better.
Who was the group making this music here?
That's me. And Tommy Taylor, he's my younger brother. He's the one that's doing the fiddling.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the one that's playing the five-string banjo.
So
I rap the banjo. They call it hammer a lick. But, you know, back in my day, they call it rap the banjo, or you pick it with your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And I play both ways, but I'm rapping it, rapping the five-string banjo there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the five-string I've read it's the original American instrument.
Mm-hmm.
A fella by the name of Joel Swinney Walker in Virginia, he made the first one, a homemade banjo. I used to have a picture of it, but someone stole it out of my five-string banjo case when I was down in Georgia. That's the history, and all the history, but that's part of the history of the five-string banjo. Of course, Earl Scruggs, he's the one brought it back. And now it's one of the top instruments in the United States. You hear it all on these commercials.
Which instrument was most important to your music, the fiddle or the banjo?
Well, I liked them both, but I played the fiddle too. I played it in the old time. I used to play and sing with a fiddle. I've got a... John, this is an old tune called Cotton Eye Joe here. Now, Tommy Taylor and he's playing the fiddle, and I'm playing the five-string banjo. It's an old-time number called Cotton Eye Joe. Here it is. Give you part of that tune there, of course, to give you a little variety on there what me and my brother plays. Now another one I'll figure it out here. Me and my brother, I don't know where you'd find anybody no more original, and you know, and
music?
And country music, and me and my brother, because, you know, we was raised back in the mountains, and fiddling the banjo, that was it, the five string. Of course, you know, the old tunes that that we play, you know, a lot of them, they come from Ireland and England and Germany. See, my grandpa, he was a German, and my grandpa on the Taylor side, he was English, and my grandmother, she was Irish. So all them old tunes, they originated, they come across the ocean over here, and it's all American music. All that's why it's so popular now, you know. Mm-hmm. It's back, you know, long in the 30s when the popular music, you know, overtook the classical music. And now about 3 years ago, country music is outselling popular music.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when Elvis Presley come along, he was singing country music, because they call it rock and roll, but they was playing rock and roll back in the 40s. You know, Elvis, he come out with that song, that hotel song, mm-hmm. in 56.
Yeah.
And, of course, he just went right to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And in two years, I read where he'd made $100 million from 56, 58, before he got in the service.
Mm-hmm.
It all started from country music.
Yeah. Could you tell us more about how some of these old songs got started?
Well, of course, I can't tell you how a lot of them got started, you know, like over in England, you know, it's all people, they just think up, it's like them three fellas are telling me about old Joe Clark. See, they went with his girls, you know, and they just sing about, they started singing. Of course, you know, I'm no writer of songs, but, you know, I can think up verses to put in songs. But a lot of them, it just comes to you, you know, if you musical inclined, because I never did take no music lessons. But, after I growed up, I never had no training. I just had to pick it up from my ear. I had a good ear for music. And I can tell when you fiddle's out of tune, or I can tell when your guitar's out of tune, or I can tell when your mandolin's out of tune. I play all the stringed instruments a little. It's like my brother Tommy, you know, Taylor. He plays all stringed instruments, from the bass, you know, the mandolin, the fiddle, and the five string. And these songs that people write, you know, they drive along maybe on the highway or maybe driving a mule down the road, and they just start humming a tune, and a lot of people that is musical inclined, can write music. They can just set the music to those tunes if they hear someone singing it.
What did you call your music back in the old days?
They call it hillbilly music. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, you know, the people that originated from, they's up in the mountains and the hills. Mm-hmm. It all originated right up in the hills.
How popular was the music back in those days?
Well,
when you played, it
was popular to a certain extent, but you know, because they called it hillbilly music, a lot of people resented it. You know, then first one of the good musicians come along with a better setup. They brought in what they called the steel guitar at that time, but now they call it a dobro. It's a guitar, you know, and they play it with a steel, you know. They use a steel slide on the strings, and they call it a dobro. But actually, when I was a kid, now a young man, 19, 20 years old, it was just a steel guitar. course, then the electrical music come in, you know. All the instruments was electrified.
When did this happen about?
Well, this happened, this happened started in the early 30s. Mm-hmm. See, when they started radio, you know, they had microphones. But back earlier, you know, there wasn't no such thing as a microphone. You just had to get out and stand there on the, if you was in a country schoolhouse singing, you just stood down on the floor. They had a stage, you was up on the stage singing. You had to have a strong voice. Mm-hmm. But now, with the microphones, you know, they could. That's what brought taking the big bands down, like Guy Lombardo and Wayne King. They had big band, maybe 20 people in a band, mm-hmm. and it had brass and horns and everything, trumpets and the saxophones.
But you don't need that with electrical.
You don't need that with electrical. They take 6-7 pieces of electric instruments, and they make as much sound as 20 brass bands. Mm-hmm. So that's why the big bands went down, because they 7-8 people could make as much music as 20. I know in Chicago they used to have the big bands come there when I was playing on the Suppertime Frolic, WJJD. They had to come out to Trianon and big ballrooms there. And the Guy Lombardo, Wayne King, and all the guys had big bands, and mm-hmm. maybe 20 guys. But now, you know, it knocked them out.
How come country music never had large bands?
Well, it was just, they just, a small group, you know, usually is in family, like the Carter family. They all got mm-hmm. together. It was all musically inclined. They just played stringed instruments. Of course, the big brass bands, they was organized. They was all union.
So country music has always been kind of a family thing, or a small barn?
It's a kind of a family thing to start with.
Yeah. Happy, when did you first become acquainted with the guitar?
Well, when we moved to Kentucky in 1918, some of the neighbors had a guitar. I never saw the guitar, and that's the first time I had any connection with a six string guitar. Before that, all I ever saw was a fiddle and a homemade banjo, and it was made had a squirrel head. They used a syrup can top for the rim, and they use bolts to bolt the plywood together.
real one.
Reel 1, side 2, Pappy Taylor interview.
Of course, now the banjos have got now, they run you around to anywhere from $500 to probably $3,000 or $4,000, some of these new banjos they have now. Of course, the guitar was actually anyone could play the guitar and sing a few songs. They's the ones that got the record back in the early 20s. The old skillet lickers, you know, had Riley Puckett. And he could play the guitar and he had a wonderful voice. And when he come to Cincinnati, the paper come out next day and said, "We have truly heard the king of the hillbillies when they heard old Blind Riley sing." Mm-hmm. At that time, there wasn't nobody could top him in country music as far as singing. Mm-hmm.
So, Pappy, you've run across some outstanding music groups in your time. Can you tell us a little bit more about these groups that you've seen and heard?
Well, of course, I met Roy Acuff when I was down in Georgia. That's before I went to Nashville, and he come out with a bunch called the Smoky Mountain Boys, and they really put the country music up in another bracket, because you know they had all the different instruments put in there, the dobro, and had the mouth organ. Of course, at that time they call it a French harp. And Roy really, really put the music up in a higher bracket for different class of people. Mm-hmm. Then later on, Eddie Arnold, he come out during the war there with a song called "Mama, Please Stay Home with Me." That's when all the mothers was working in factories during the Second World War. And first thing you know, Eddie Arnold, he'd put that country music in another bracket, and that's how it got kept going up. Mm-hmm. Then all these other guys come in, like of course Roy Clark was younger. They had been to 51. Roy, as I was telling you before, he got into it, and Roy helped put it up in another bracket, and now you know it's the top music in the country at this date. Mm-hmm. 1978, it still tops.
You mentioned the old skillet lickers. Can you describe their popularity?
Well, at that time, in 1925 or 6, 7 or 8, you know, up there, they was the best country pickers in the whole country. Old Blind Riley, he sing in Lexington, I believe he's 35. A friend of mine told me that he was there. And I forget where he said he sang the Blind Child or the Little Rosewood Casket. I forget which one. But he said, he come out on that stage, they let him out there, and he had to sing that song 7 times before that crowd would stop applauding. And to this day, they ain't nobody that's ever done that I've ever heard of. They wouldn't let him leave. And of course, you know Burt Lane, you met him. And of course, he would verify those words. And he always said that there's no one to this day could take him and the fiddler, Clayton McMichen, could take no show away from them because they was it. They was just that popular. They used to go to New York. They never got no royalty for their records, but their records are still selling right now. Their albums are still selling. And they went and they'd give them $1,000 each time they come in there, and that was big money. And they never got no royalties to this day, but they was the top entertainers. Anywhere they went, they'd fill an auditorium. That was back in the 20s. Mm-hmm. And then as things went along, McMichen, you know, he got older, and the other fiddlers took over, you know. And it's like Bob Wells, he come along with a Western swing outfit. And McMichen and Burt Lane was the first ones to use two fiddles that I ever heard. And then Bob Wells, he started using it in his swing band. And he was the king of swing back in those days.
You mean there were two fiddles in a band at the same time?
The Skillet Licker started the two fiddles in the band. Yeah, they was the ones started. Mm-hmm. And they're the first ones I ever heard on record playing two fiddles, playing harmony. And of course, they had in symphony orchestras, they had three, four fiddles playing, but they was the first country fiddlers to play that two-string harmony.
Which music group in all the years impressed you the most, would you say?
Well, to me, the Skillet Lickers impressed me because that's my younger days. Mm-hmm. They impressed me more than anybody else. There was an old man played fiddle. His name was Bowman Grayson. I met him when I was in the coal field. He was playing with a fella called Henry Whitter. And Henry Whitter is the one that originated the fox chase on the mouth organ, or the French harp. And him and that old blind fella, Grayson, they was the ones that impressed me too. But far as the big group, the old Skillet Lickers, they was the tops. And everybody heard them. When they come here, and I think it's 1930, they played the music hall, and they applauded. I wasn't there, but two of my cousins there, and they applauded. They said at least 4 to 5 minutes before they'd ever even let them play. They just kept hollering and screaming, like the kids would scream when Elvis Presley would come out, when he come out with his twisting his hips and singing that rock and roll stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's how popular they were. Mm-hmm. 'Cause when I was with the Kentucky Mountaineers, we had a good country band too. Mm-hmm. But we had me and Casey Jones. Casey Jones was one of the fiddlers. We had Charlie Linville, and Uncle Henry wanted to keep the three fiddles, you know. And if Charlie would have stayed with us, we'd have had an outfit like Bob Wells had, because, you know, we had saxophones when we go on to play dances, and we'd have had clarinets, and we had drums. We'd have had the same thing as, yet, you know, we broke up. The guys, Charlie, he left us, and of course, Casey, he went into the Army, but when he come back, Casey was one of the champion fiddlers, too. He lives in Lexington. He's got a barber, he's got a watch shop down there, jewelry store. Casey lives down there now. His name, everybody called him Casey Jones. His name was Kelsey Jones, but everybody called him Casey.
Yeah.
Like the old train song.
Uh-huh.
Song of the Casey Jones. That's one of the first old train songs. Back in them days, train songs was was really popular. You know, it sing about them big old black engines. And Casey Jones was one of the first ones.
You mentioned the Skillet Lickers in association with recording. Can you describe how country music became involved with the recording industry?
Well, these boys was playing down in Atlanta. One of these guys played the fiddle. On Saturday afternoon, they'd take their fiddle and guitar or banjo, and they'd go to town, and they started, you know, playing in the street. And some of the recording people heard them, and they offered them a job to come to New York to play and to make a record. So they went, and their record started selling so much that they had them to come back again. I don't know whether they went back three or four times, but they would give them $1,000 to come there, and that is worth about $4,000 or $5,000 now. That's big money. You could buy your Ford car for $750, $800. That Ford 28 Ford Roadster, that was about $750, $800 car. That is big money.
Was this back when the music was being recorded for the first time?
Well, that's 1924. The Skillet Lickers recorded for Columbia.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was they'd had early recordings back in the in 1912. I don't know exactly the first recording, but Edison come out with their old cylinder record. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the first one. And the first tune that I ever heard on the old cylinder record, I'd say, was about 1912 or 13. And the tune that was sung on there was a song called "The Preacher and the Bear." You know, you may have heard it sing. Mm-hmm. I heard Andy Griffith. I heard him sing it. But that was the first song that I ever heard on an old cylinder record. That is 19 and, I don't know where it'd be, 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. But it's before the First World War. Mm-hmm. First World War started in 14. And, of course, then they come out with the disc records too, but you know that come out later. But that was the first song where it says the preacher went out a hunting, was on one Sunday morning. It was against his religion, but he took along his gun. And on his way, he met a very fine quail and one big grizzly hare. And on his way returning home, he met a great big grizzly bear. And the bear run him up the tree, and he was praying to the Lord. I used to know all the song, but that's the way it went. That was the first song that I ever heard on a old cylinder record. The cylinder's about the size of a common glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the first one I ever heard.
Mm-hmm. How many records did a group like the Skillet Lickers sell back then or through the years?
Well, I read where the Corn Liquor Still in Georgia, they put out a kind of a series on that. And that's at that time, that Corn Liquor Still in Georgia sold 1 million records at that time. Mm-hmm. Hardly anybody ever very few people had record players. Of course, now every kid's got one, or two or three, mm-hmm. like two cars in each family. And them boys never got no royalty off of that either.
The only way they benefited was that they became more popular.
Popular, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when they went out to put on the show, people was there.
Yeah. So it was just advertising for them.
Yeah, it's what made them was the advertisement. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they all originated down around, it's in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Around, one of them lived at Calhoun, Georgia. You know what happened there. Bert Lance, that's where Bert Lance ended up.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I used to be in that town. Used to play a big square dance close there.
Mm-hmm.
In Dalton, Georgia. I used to play a square dance in Dalton, Georgia in 48 and 49. Every Saturday night, we'd have 200 to 300 people in there every Saturday night, square dancing. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'd be playing rock and roll stuff and had piano and drum and bass fiddle. We had rhythm section behind us.
Mm-hmm. This is back in the
48, 49.
I see.
And we was playing rock and roll. I had a hot guitar player, you know, he'd play all that rock and roll stuff.
Oh, you had rock and roll back in the late 40s.
In those days, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd doing jitterbugs, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and then they'd play a square dance. Sometimes there'd be 100 and maybe 150 on that floor at one time, square dancing. That's how big a deal it was. It cost a dollar to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Every Saturday night, I was playing on a radio station in Rome, Georgia. That's when, during the Korean War started there, and I broke up my band. That's when I went to Nashville to
mm-hmm.
play with Bill Monroe.
Mm-hmm. Pappy, how important has the Cincinnati area been in the history of country music?
Well, there's a lot of rural people come here to Cincinnati to work, you know, from the Appalachian Mountains. And when we started on WCKY, 28, we had quite a following.
Mm-hmm.
And I started on WLW in 28, I think I told you before, and they used to have some of the top country pickers there.
Mm-hmm.
They had the best there. I think I told you that before.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they had the old Skelt Lickers, Clayton McMitchin, Burt Lane, and Riley Puckett. They were just the tops in those days. It was a central place here for country music. WLS is in Chicago, and this WLW here, that's when it's 500,000 watts. They got out all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 500,000 watts, and you just turn your dial anywhere, and it just come in practically anywhere you turn your dial, because it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have a big following here. That was back in the 30s and the 40s. But they got away from it. WCKY, they closed up their night show there. They had a big following for years, and time changed. But this was an essential center for country music.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't follow through with it, and all the big acts ended up in Nashville.
Can you describe some of the memorable happenings in the history of country music? Memorable concerts or anything like this?
Well, back in those days, they didn't have concerts. You know, they just had one-night stands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they played small theaters or big theaters. They had large auditoriums, these schools, and it kept getting more popular and popular as the years went on. 1928, I don't think I mentioned Jimmy Rogers. He was the blues singer and the yodeler. Mm-hmm. And he was a top singer in those days. A lot of people tried to copy him. Even the old blind Riley Puckett, he was the first one I ever heard yodel till I heard Jimmy Rogers. But Riley, he yodeled before Jimmy ever played or recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, I think, had come out in 28 or 9 with a tune called Way Out on the Mountain, and he sang blues stuff. He was the blues singer, and Gene Autry, I was going around playing shows in Gene Autry in the early 30s there. That's before Gene ever got popular. And he used to come out on the stage and he'd say, I'm out here to represent Jimmy Rogers. And he'd sing Jimmy's songs, and he was very close to his voice. Of course, he went on to be one of the top country singers, western singers.
Where did Jimmy Rogers play at around here?
Well, Jimmy never did come here while I was here.
Mm-hmm.
He played in the South.
Uh-huh.
Now, Burt Lane played shows with him.
Uh-huh.
Down South. I think it's in Tennessee, somewhere in Tennessee. They put a big show on, big fiddlers contest, and he played shows with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the top blues. He was the blues singer, they called him, and the blue yodeler.
Mm-hmm. Pappy, can you describe some of the places in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati that are still familiar to us? For instance, the music hall, how it was back in those days, and maybe WLW and WCKY, how it was back in those days, how these places were.
Well, it's all new to the radio audience. Anybody could play Thumb G on the guitar. You know, the people that run the radio stations, they didn't seem to know. You know, most anyone could sing or play a few chords could get on the radio
mm-hmm.
at that time. Now, when I went to CKY, I went over and asked for an audition, and they asked me, had I ever played on the radio, and I said, yeah. I played one show on WLW. But I says, it's Sunday night, and I says, that's all the spot they had at that time, and we wanted to come over here where we could play Saturday nights. He says, well, then you don't need an audition if you play on WLW. I just played the fiddle. We had another boy played the banjo, and then my cousin.
Where was WLW located at then? Do you remember?
It's out on Spring Grove Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
They used to make the Crosley radios out there.
I see.
They made radios there, and they had the station out there.
You played there over a number of weeks, so?
No, I just played one show.
One show, in 1928?
Yeah.
One show.
About the last of 28, and then the 29, I come over, I think right after Christmas, and I started playing on WCKY. They had what they call a country show there every Saturday night. Right. Mr. Moore, he was the top man over there then. I forget his first name. And CKY is the one give me the name of, because I'd born in Carolina, North Carolina. And he said, well, we'll just call you the Carolina Troubadours. At the music hall, I never played at the music hall. When the Skilt Lickers come here, they put on the big show there.
Mm-hmm.
And they took that town when they they just people that hollered and screamed when they come there, because they was the top country band. There was nobody could touch them in their line.
Getting back to CKY, where was it located at?
It is located to 6 and Madison.
6 and Madison.
Up on the top floor there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have no elevators in. We had to climb them stairs, and the time we got up there, if we'd a little late, we was singing when we was out of breath. And when the skillet lickers, they come there, I think it was in 31, I believe it was, or 30 or 31. I just had left. Mm-hmm. And they used to, people would be lined up downstairs to get up there. There'd be so many, you know, I'd want to see them. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of equipment did you work with at WCKY back then? What kind of,
Well, all we played in the studio there. All they had was one of them little round mics. Uh-huh. Of course, now, you know, they got all that modern stuff. They had a little round mic. It had rubber. I think it had some kind of bands or strings holding it, mm-hmm, to keep from jarring. And three or four of us would get around there, and we'd play, and then another bunch would come on. Had a bunch, Guy Blakeman had a bunch, he's one of the top fiddlers. And they call him, I think, the Licking River Fiddlers, I believe they called him. Mm-hmm. Licking River Boys, I forget the name, it's been so long. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to remember so much stuff, you know.
Where were you living at the time, Pappy?
I live in Elmwood.
Elmwood?
On Linden Street there in Elmwood.
That's in Cincinnati?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's out in the valley.
And you'd come over here by automobile?
Yeah.
To CKY?
Yeah, guy'd bring us over. Uh-huh. Then we'd go back out of the place there close to Procter & Gamble's, I was telling you before, and we'd play. During the homebrew days, they'd have a bathtub full of homebrew, and it'd square dance till about 4 o'clock in the morning, we'd all go home.
Yeah.
We was radio stars, and that. Everybody thought we was something because we'd playing on the radio. But we wasn't the more than the other guys. But it's funny when you got on radio, you was it. Mm-hmm.